The decline of Detroit is the focus of the documentary film Detropia. WKAR-TV airs the movie tonight at 10. Our Scott Pohl talked with Heidi Ewing, the co-director of Detropia, starting with what the title means.
Well, we were looking for a title for the film, and we tried hundreds and hundreds of titles. The original title of the movie was Detroit Hustles Harder, which we had started 3 years ago with that concept. And then the film changed and evolved, and that was no longer an appropriate title for the movie. And so we were thinking and just keeping our minds open. And there's a shot in the film of an auto parts shop that has been shuttered, and an artist has come in and changed the words auto parts to read Utopia. And it's a shot in the film. A guy walks by this auto parts store. And I just started playing around with Utopia and Detroit. And really, it is a combination of the word Detroit and Utopia. Because to many, especially during the Great Migration and people coming up from the South, Detroit really represented an economic utopia, an opportunity, and the beginnings of a real middle class, especially a black middle class. So, some would say that Detroit has fallen into a dystopian situation, but many believe that it really can be jump-started and rebooted to once again live up to its initial promise.
There's a powerful image in Detropia. It's actually visited a couple of times, of a man and a woman wearing gas masks. Can you tell me where that came from?
Well, actually, there's a lot of artists that are moving to the city of Detroit, and we present two of them in the film.
At Baltimore, we were looking into New York City, and Detroit came up. We can experiment here.
The husband and wife who do performance art, and they do installations, and they do murals, and some of their persona and some of the performance art they do involves them in gold gas masks. And if you ask them, they would say they represent sort of the pitfalls of corporate America, and they have their own theories about why they put the masks on. But it's a very arresting image, and so we followed them for a year, and there's several scenes with them in the movie, and that's where the image comes from.
In a way, it's one of the most positive images in the movie because it depicts two artists who have chosen Detroit on purpose. They moved to Detroit because it's less expensive than other cities they considered relocating to. It's the one thing in the whole movie that has people choosing Detroit for a positive reason.
Actually, I would argue with that assessment, because if you look at all of the main characters in our film, including Crystal, George, and Mistress Tommy Stevens, the subtext, of course, is that all of those individuals have the resources to leave Detroit. They don't have to be there, and they choose to stay. And Mr. Stevens chooses to keep the Raven nightclub open, and George McGregor chooses to continue at the Union, even though he could walk away with a pension. Crystal Starr is a smart 20-something Detroiter who clearly has the, you know, wherewithal, brains, and ambition to leave if she chose to. So for me, actually, all of the subjects in the film represent the can-do spirit of Detroit, because they don't have to live there. And so, while we don't come out and say it explicitly with all of the characters, that is something that is true about all of them.
I'll give you that point. I was only referring to people from outside Detroit choosing Detroit, the sort of thing that people might think Detroit needs, outsiders
right.
to choose Detroit.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's, you know, the artists in the film represent this sort of this community of newcomers that, like you say, are choosing to move to the city and relocate there. It's not just, they don't just come for their cheap real estate. I mean, they also come for, you know, the excitement, the romance, the nostalgia. There's sort of the hip factor that Detroit has, you know, taken on among young people. In some ways, the economic crises, in this very twisted way, the national recession is helping Detroit in some ways, because a lot of young people that would have chosen to move to, you know, New York or L.A. or San Francisco are choosing Detroit because it's more affordable. So I think Detroit in some ways is benefiting a lot from, the economic factors that kids coming out of college are facing. So it's kind of an interesting twist.
Detropia came out a year or so ago. Can you tell me whether you have stayed in touch with any of these people? Are things looking up for some or all of these people?
Yeah, I mean, I'm in touch all the time with all the subjects, actually. We, you know, talk very often. I talked to George and Tommy yesterday and Crystal last week, and we're always in touch. And, you know, I think that they would say that, in a modest way, they would all say that they've seen some improvements in Detroit since the movie came out. You know, I think the national reporting on the city is definitely so extreme. It's either, you know, about to go bankrupt and is the worst place to live in the world, or it's the comeback city. And I think that, you know, most Detroiters are weary of those interpretations, and including the subjects in our film, I think they would say they've seen some you know, moderate uplift since the film came out. Of course, since the film came out, the city has been pretty much taken over by a financial manager, so there's obviously a long road ahead. But I definitely sense a more of an optimism, and that the uptick in the auto industry did start happening at the very end of our time in Detroit. And in fact, actually, after Sundance, I went back and we included a scene to reflect that uptick because it had just started and our film was finished. So, yeah, I think there's definitely more optimism in the city now than there was then.
There are people in Detroit who have wearied of images of Detroit, the decaying buildings, shut down factories, and so on. They often use the phrase ruin porn to describe that kind of depiction of Detroit. Did you face criticism along that line with Detropia?
Yeah, you know, I think that Detroiters are very, very sensitive about how their city is portrayed. But actually, I think from my experience in bringing the film to Detroit, I think people were very, very concerned that that's what the film was going to be. And most people, upon having seen it, feel differently, feel that there's a tenderness and there's, you know, there's a lot of love being shown to the city in our film. And we were pretty careful not to, you know, overdo it with just abandoned buildings. Most of the shots in our film have people in the shots because, you know, Detroiters interact with these spaces every single day, and they're sick of the spaces or they're curious about the spaces. I mean, they have their own relationship with these abandoned buildings and with the past. So we tried to reflect that with sensitivity in the film. To make a film about Detroit and not include any of those images is also, you know, bad reporting, because that is one of the top things that the city is trying to deal with. And every single day, the administration of the city and the people are discussing what to do with the vast tracts of land, with the uninhabited structures. I mean, it's sort of front and center right now in the city of Detroit, and its future really depends on, in so many ways, how that is resolved. So you have to include it, but you try not to fetishize it. And I believe that, you know, I hope we succeeded in that.
I was going to ask you if you think Detropia had the impact you had hoped for and what it means to have it on television with PBS bringing it to independent lens.
You know, every film you make, really, the impact is so hard to measure because it's over time. You know, people discover a film at different times, and teachers start using it when they discover it. And, you know, it's we've seen with all of our movies, it's never over, you know. People come across these movies when they come across them. Some saw it in the movie theater. I mean, it played in 107 cities. Other people have, many people have seen it on Netflix. Some universities have already started showing it. I mean, PBS will open up. Millions and millions of viewers will see this film. So, you know, it's one of those sort of, it's always a moving target. There's international interest in the city of Detroit. The country is intensely interested right now in what becomes of this really sacred city, this mythical place, at least in the American imagination. People care about what happens to Detroit, and the discussion will continue for many, many years. And so for us, this is our, you know, cinematic contribution to that conversation, and it's not the whole story. It's our story. It's what we found. It's in some ways a meditation, in some ways a poem. So, you know, yes, it is having an impact and will continue to have an impact in ways that I can't even imagine. So it's not really up to the filmmaker anymore, and we've learned over the years to accept that and just sort of see what happens. You know, you make the film, you put everything you have into it, and then it really finds its own home and its own life, and people use it the way they want to. So I'm sort of watching that from the sidelines at this point. You know, we made a choice to work with PBS a long time ago in production on the film because we wanted the film to be free when it broadcast and not on subscriber television. And we wanted the film to have no commercials when people watched it. And we wanted to have editorial control of the film and not have somebody cut it down or change it. And all of those things were true with PBS, with Independent Lens. It was a way for us to protect our work and to share it with as many people as possible upon broadcast. And so we're really, really excited about it.
So what's next for you and your partners at Loki Films?
Well, we are actually in post-production on a documentary for ESPN about the glass ceiling for elite female athletes across all the different sports. And our film will air on ESPN August 20th. And we have Mary Lou Retton and Chris Evert and Lolo Jones and Lisa Leslie and all these amazing women across all these disciplines sort of talking about, you know, what happened to them once they hit the top of their sport. And it's really interesting sort of first-person anecdotes from some of the most fascinating people in sports. So we're excited about that. And we have a lot of other things in development that are going to be coming down the pike in the next couple of years.
Heidi Ewing is co-director and co-producer of Detropia coming up on PBS. Thank you so much.
It was my pleasure.
For Current State, I'm Scott Pohl.